Hey Siri, play Social Geek Radio.
Okay, Social Geek Radio podcast coming up.
Hello, geeks, and welcome to Social Geek Radio. I'm Jack Munson, your host and social media consigliere. Today's show is brought to you by Franchise Payments Network, Subtle Strauss, and Constant Contact. Get time-saving tools and guidance to grow your franchise with Constant Contact's Franchise Partner Program. Franchise partners get access to all of Constant Contact's powerful online marketing tools, including email automation, social marketing, and real-time reporting, plus those built just for the franchise business model, like Central Send, Campaign Approval, and Global Unsubscribe. Grow something great with a dedicated account management team and award-winning tech support to guide you every step of the way. Visit constantcontact.com/socialgeek to get started. Now is Gary Occhiogrosso. Gary, how are you?
I'm doing well, Jack, and thanks very much for having me on the program today. I really appreciate it.
I'm glad you're here, and as we were talking a bit before we got on the air, I'm glad I'm going to see you at multiple conferences and events coming up later this year in such places as Philly and Las Vegas and New York City, all of the places that I've kind of missed going over the past year or so.
Absolutely. I'm really excited that the world is reopened, the world of franchising especially, and the conferences are back on. I was going through some withdrawals last year.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if anyone's on the fence about going to multi-unit in Vegas or the IFE in New York City or one of my favorites, Springboard in Philly, don't hesitate. You will see Gary and I at all of those locations. So, Gary, I've been asking this same question of so many leaders in the franchise space over the past few months, and I really wanted to get your take on this. And it's all about the culture in franchising. So first, tell me a little bit about your business, Franchise Growth Solutions, and what kind of culture have you developed with that business?
Sure. Thanks for asking. So Franchise Growth Solutions really was started at a fork in the road, so to speak, in my life after having been in business for myself many years and then being the president or CEO of numerous franchise companies. I had decided to strike out on my own, as they say. And a lot of that was pushed to me, so to speak, because people would ask me constantly if I would help them, can I work with them? And my answer was always the same. Hey, I'm gainfully employed. It probably would be a conflict of interest, but maybe someday. So back in 2016, I decided to launch a consulting practice that was really geared towards startups and emerging brands. And it's evolved over the last almost 5 years at this point. But we started out really as a sales organization because we found out that a lot of emerging brands, they make a few errors, to say the least. But one of them is that either the franchisor attempts to sell franchises or award franchises, or they find that if they want to hire a professional person, say a chief development officer or someone that has years of experience presenting franchises to individuals, that the cost is just prohibitive on a startup. So that's what really started the company. From there, we evolved into what it is now, which is what we call a four silo approach. The first being franchise development. We actually go in, and this was a result of finding out that if we would get a product franchisor that was developed, very often they would develop in a way that made it difficult or more difficult to actually award a franchise. So what do I mean by that? What I mean is that as the company tasked with the responsibility of selling the franchise to someone, we wanted to make sure that all the pieces and parts, so to speak, mm-hmm. were done in a way that were not only conducive to franchisee success, but also made the job simpler. So we would often go in and find FDDs that were deal killers instead of a sales tool. We would go in and we would find manuals that really weren't useful to a franchisee or required the franchisor to spend more time and get closer to some of the parts of developing a franchise store. For example, getting involved in construction or getting involved in equipment and getting so close to the franchisee that if the franchisor did something wrong, or even if they didn't do something wrong, ultimately they would get blamed by the franchisee. So our approach was, let's go in and help these startups actually create manuals and job aids and an FDD with mature franchise best practices. So myself, I've been a franchisor, my partner's been a franchisor. We'll go in and we'll help these companies from day one approach their franchise tactics in terms of how they're going to select franchisees, how they're going to teach them, how they're going to support them and really make their franchisees successful. They do it from the point of view of a mature franchise company. So that's the first silo, franchise development. The second one I've already spoken about, and that's franchise development. We get involved in their website, their PR, their lead generation. We tell them things, as I often say, I make a living telling people things that sometimes they don't want to hear. They don't want to, a lot of startups don't want to hear that they may need hundreds of leads, 100, 150, 200 leads to sell one franchise. And that costs money. Yeah. And many franchisors just look, you know, the franchise business is their baby and everybody loves their baby. So they think everyone else is going to love their baby.
And sometimes you have to step in and say, your baby is not so cute as you think it is.
Well, yes. But what I actually do is I keep a little more positive. I tell them everyone else's baby is equally beautiful and in the contest. Okay. So what we do is we really share that knowledge of how it's done. And we set expectations that are realistic for the franchisor so they can set budgets and they can set up how they're going to develop their infrastructure. And the infrastructure takes us to the third silo. Very often they can't hire a director of real estate, a procurement manager. They don't understand supply chain when they're going to take their company from two or three restaurants to 300 or even 30 for that matter. So we supply all of the intel, all of the contacts, whether it's architects, general contractors, supply chain people, equipment people, sign people, whatever they need to put in front of their franchisee, not only so that the franchisor can fulfill its obligations of its franchise agreement, but more importantly, to set the franchisee up for success so that when a prospect speaks to that franchisee, they validate in the most positive way and the franchisee is more successful. And that takes us to the fourth silo. If we scale the company up, and I say if, because sometimes the companies don't scale, franchisors don't want to scale it to a point where it might be of interest to a private equity firm, mm-hmm. or they may not want to exit, but very often franchisees and franchisors need money. So we get involved in the funding process, whether it's on the franchisee level or on the franchisor level, where it may actually include a private equity placement. So those are the four silos for Franchise Growth Solutions. From a culture point of view, I can tell you it's based on truth, reality, and integrity. And some of those qualities franchisors don't really like. Which may be a bold statement and perhaps not intentionally, but very often franchisors, you know, they want to sell 50 franchises the first year. Yes. Well, okay, let's look at your cost per acquisition and maybe that's not reality. They don't want to deal with it. Or they don't really want to spend a lot of time making sure that their manuals and their training programs are what they need to be to set a franchisee up for success. For me, that's an integrity problem, and that tells me that they're chasing franchise fees when in reality, they should be in the royalty business, yeah. and that's directly related to the success of their franchisees. So I would say that's the culture of Franchise Growth Solutions. We're not, don't get me wrong, we're not missionaries. We're not here to save the world in the franchise business. But at this particular point in my lifetime, as somebody who likes to share information that I've kind of glommed over the last 35 years, you know, I do that in Forbes and I do that at NYU. You know, my goal is, hey, This is how we see it. If you see it differently, that's fine. There's other companies out there that you can work with, but you can't work with us.
Yeah. I like that idea of always considering the franchisee's success in everything that you do. I think that works well for everyone involved, and also maybe helps focus the franchisor a bit on what they should be focused on, and that's their franchisees being successful. And the other thing I really like that I just heard you say, Gary, is about doing everything for an emerging brand, but with the point of view of a mature brand, you know, with you and your partners who've been around and doing this and have had a lot of success. I think that's something that's maybe lacking in the industry right now. Enough people who are, you know, really looking at this, like, let's not run this like an emerging startup. Let's run this like somebody who has, you know, scored a few touchdowns already, right? And you know, we know how to get into the end zone. So I like that part of your culture a lot. Let's talk a little bit about the industry in general. What is it about franchising that keeps guys like you and guys like me and people like most of our mutual friends coming back year after year, working with these same types of brands? What is it about franchising that maybe has a compelling culture?
Well, there's probably a few things on that list. I would start off by saying that it's geared to Main Street as opposed to Wall Street. Although obviously when you build up a company and these brands go public, it is geared towards Wall Street. Mm-hmm. So if we take a step back, just to kind of peel back the onion on that statement, our country operates on small businesses. That's the heart of the United States. That's the American dream. That's what people who arrive in this country, one of the things they aspire to do is open a business, work for themselves, you know, build a legacy, build enterprise value. And franchising is directly aimed at that. And it gives people and it affords people the opportunity to go into a business with a system that's been proven. And the person entering in as a franchisee doesn't really need to be, and this is another bold statement that sometimes people, you know, raise their eyebrow, I'm about to say it. You don't need to be an entrepreneur to become a great franchisee. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, entrepreneurs don't necessarily make great franchisees because entrepreneurs are inventors and they want to reinvent the wheel. And franchisees are people who see a system and understand that that system is a cash flow vehicle and they apply that system the way it was meant to be applied, and they get a measured result, and they simply duplicate that, whether it's multi-unit or multi-brand, or in some cases, multi-unit and multi-brand. Mm-hmm. So it's a very different point of view. I guess I would sum it up by saying that in this particular part of this conversation is that it gives people an opportunity to build a business, build legacy, build equity, and not have that 9-to-5 grind that we all hear about. The other pieces of the business that I find attractive to me as an individual is that most people in the franchising business, and you've gone to IFA and you've gone to the conferences, you know, they're all willing to share. They're all willing to share information. They're all willing to help everyone, you know, grow as an industry. And I think that that's unique, certainly in some of the businesses that I've looked at. I think that's a unique situation where your competitors aren't really competitors. They're kind of rivals, if you will.
Yeah.
Still all willing to share information. And I think that's very, very important from a cultural and a human point of view.
Back in a moment after this word from Suttle Strauss. Suttle Strauss eliminates the franchisor marketing busy work of redundant customizations while protecting brand standards by giving franchisees self-service access to customize, print, download, and mail brand right collateral for their local markets from one central online portal. They offer franchises scalable solutions for managing their marketing collateral, direct mail, promotional products, and signage needs. Growing brands like Goldfish Swim School, Christian Brothers Automotive, and Topper's Pizza have saved thousands of dollars and have been able to run their marketing programs with a small graphic design staff by leaning on Suttle Strauss as a strategic marketing partner. You can get a free demo or download some case studies at SuttleStrauss.com/franchise. That's Suttle-Strauss.com/franchise. Gary, we're here in the final days of June, getting ready to start the second half of 2021, which I can't even believe we're about to start the second half of 2021. What are you looking to see in the second half of this year? And what types of things are you pointing out to your clients that they need to be aware of as we get into the latter half of the year?
Okay, great question. Now, we have clients in various categories, but the vast majority of our clients are in the restaurant space.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's focus on that because I think that's unique in the sense that all of us, unless we've been living under a rock on Mars, we've all heard how the restaurant industry has taken a huge hit as a result of COVID. And there's no doubt that it has. But again, peeling back the onion, as I like to say, if you look at where that's actually been detrimental, it's been detrimental in urban centers, inner cities, where people were not going into their offices.
People, yeah,
like New York City, which were essentially shut down, no theater, no restaurants, no people going to work. So did restaurants take a hit? Yes, absolutely. What you will find is that in some suburban markets, some restaurants in some categories actually had some of their, you know, had one of their best years ever. I have two clients that had their best year ever in 2020.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think that's a good point that the mainstream media just totally misses. And I know you'll be shocked to hear that the mainstream media is missing something about franchising.
Yeah, well, I have, Jack, I got to interrupt. I'll tell you, I don't believe they're missing. They're aiming at another narrative.
But yeah, let's yeah. Here, okay? Not part of the agenda, right?
Not part of their agenda.
But I'll tell you, man, Chicago's the same way. Down in the Loop, where people are not going to, you know, the 100-story office buildings to work every day, not a lot of restaurants thriving. Out here in the suburbs and out in the more small town areas of Illinois, things are going pretty well for a lot of shops.
So, and it's the same here, and I'm sure it's the same in every big city and then the surrounding suburbs in what, you know, would be called the metro areas. So what are the opportunities and what do I see here for the second half? Well, let's talk about, and I've told folks, it's like the forest has burned down and it was all this ash and, you know, burned trees. But now we've got a lot of new trees going because the sun is shining and there's opportunities. What are those opportunities? Well,
yeah.
In the restaurant business, we've got several. Number one, we have had a lot of restaurants close. I don't know what the number is. Someone said it was like 100,000 restaurants have closed, which means that there are 100,000, if that's the number, 100,000 second generation restaurant spaces available to be reopened as restaurants.
Yes.
What does that mean? In a fast casual space, many of my clients to turn the key, you know, might cost $400,000-$500,000. Well, in a built-out second-generation restaurant space, the cost might be $300,000 or $250,000. So your cost of entry is lower. That's an opportunity. Landlords are much more flexible. They've done without rent for a while. They want tenants back in their spaces. They're far more flexible than they've been, not only in rent and rent negotiation, but also with tenant improvement dollars. Mm. And again, That drives the cost of entry lower. And I would say the third piece to it, and there's one others, but the third piece to it is the cost of money. I'm not a statistician with respect to interest rates, but I don't ever remember my grandparents even talking about 2.75 or 2% interest rates.
Yeah. So, especially in the 70s, 80s, 90s, not happening.
Oh boy, yeah. Absolutely. And so when you think about the cost of money, it's absolutely an opportunity because you can secure that money for years and you're benefiting by having higher returns because your debt cost is a lot lower. And I would say the fourth thing driving the industry right now is I think people, I know folks that I know, I don't want to say they don't trust corporate America anymore, but there's a confidence, their confidence has been shaken. You know, they worked for a company for 30 years, and we see this in recessions also, which is also a great time for franchising. But in this particular case, you know, they work for a company for 30 years. They walk in, you know, March 6th, March 7th, whenever it is, March 13th of 2020, and they're furloughed. Yeah. And, you know, now they're working from home and they're kind of used to the idea of working from home.
And sure. And having a flexible schedule. And
absolutely.
And, yeah,
and
sure.
And when people ask me, what should a business return? A very wise man taught me this. He said, a business should return two things, more time and more money, not just more time and not just more money, both more time and more money. So
I
see the world and people now getting involved in franchising motivated, not because they had a fight with their boss or they hate their job, because that's kind of a negative entry point.
Yeah.
But from a positive point of view where, hey, I can open up this restaurant and it's going to cost me less. The landlord's going to help me build it out. I can borrow money at a lower cost. And you know what? I'm ready to take the plunge. And we see that every day. We see it because we see the amount of leads that are being generated online, especially early in the pandemic. And we've seen that carried over now. And I believe the second half of 21 and probably all through 22, we're going to see this this uptick in franchising. I don't know how long it would last, but that would be my professional and personal evaluation of the industry trend for the next, call it 18 months.
Okay, perfect. And I think there's a lot of thought there too from people thinking that if I don't do this now, will there be an opportunity like this in the next 5 years? Probably not. You know, from all of the factors that you just shared, are we ever going to have this sort of perfect storm of getting into my own business, you know, again, in the next 5 years or 10 years or our lifetime? I don't know that anyone could think that that's going to happen again. So timing is everything, and this could be the time.
Yeah, absolutely. People, I've heard people say, well, there's really no great opportunity left. And my position is, first of all, I think they're crazy.
Yeah.
But I think there's plenty of opportunity. It just may look different than what you believe it should look like.
Yeah.
So you have to recognize opportunity in the face of, you know, all of the things that are going on. If we go back to the Great Recession in 08, 09, there were opportunities there also, not so much on the money side because the banks were broke, but the banks now are flush with cash. So the opportunity to get money that you may not have been able to get prior, that's an opportunity.
Yeah. One last thing I wanted to ask you specifically in the restaurant space, is there a particular part of the restaurant sector that you're real bullish on for the second half of this year? You know, whether it's pizza or healthy foods or, you know, the great chicken wars are still happening, that kind of thing. Is there an area that you think is really, really has a lot more opportunity?
Well, I think it's a little broader than specific menu, because in my world, taste is king.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a health-oriented concept, but you don't taste good, yeah, I don't know about that.
Not in this country, pal.
Yeah, why do people still eat fried chicken and cheeseburgers? Because they taste good. I think what I would tell you is, I think there's a tremendous amount of upside still raging in the fast casual segment. And mm-hmm. I think fast casual has now undergone a transition. So if we look at fast casual and we start to describe fast casual, say, as let's use a couple of examples, let's say Chipotle, Panera Bread, some of my clients like Burger Village, just the better, you know, the better quality, not the typical fast food places that you've yeah. seen, or that we've all grown up with, that started like in the 50s, 60s. What we're seeing there is we're seeing more use of apps. We're seeing more, almost the marketing becoming more, I'm going to use the term fast food, whereas in the past, fast casual places, they didn't, you know, maybe they didn't run specials, or they didn't advertise, or they didn't do a lot of stuff. You know, they kind of took a highfalutin position where, hey, you know, you're going to spend $2 more in our place, but you're going to get great food. And yeah. that's wonderful. And I agreed with it. And that's why I play in the fast casual arena. But I think now you're seeing curbside delivery. You're seeing Uber Eats and the third party ordering platforms and a lot of the things that really came out of the pandemic now being carried forward in fast casual. So I think that's going to take an already, I think, a fast growing segment in the restaurant business and propel it even further than it was being propelled prior to the pandemic. So fast casual, to me, that's where you want to be. I think that when you start to look at various cuisines, I think, you know, the United States, certainly here in New York and on the coasts, and I do a lot of business in the Midwest, so I don't think that the Midwest falls far behind in terms of what's trending. I think with you know, food networks like the Food Network, for example.
Yeah.
I think, you know, so many people watch that the understanding of food, being adventurous, trying new cuisines has allowed a lot of different Asian cuisine to come into play, like Vietnamese and Thai and Korean, which 20 years ago, you didn't see a lot of that. Mediterranean, Middle Eastern, again, even 10 years ago, you didn't see that. The use of ingredients like kale or organic beef or different, you didn't see a lot of that because people really didn't understand what it is. But with the advent and the education that I think people get through the Food Network and becoming more adventurous, you know, the term foodie,
yeah,
I think that helps drive concepts to be a little bit more adventuresome and create further points of differentiation in their concept and their brand. Because look, does the world really need another pizza joint or another hamburger joint? Well, maybe, but if you come out with something completely different and new, I think people are more willing to try it, test it, and you can get some traction and not have a lot of competition.
Excellent point. Before we go, Gary, there's one more thing I have to ask you about because it's near and dear to my heart, and that is your podcast, Mastermind Minutes. I love the concept of this. Tell everybody a little bit about the whole idea of one guest and one question. Where did that come from?
Okay, well, I'll give you the background on it. It's really the frustrated New Yorker. Okay. So when I
reading through hours of interviews, I'm guessing, right, to find something interesting.
Exactly. When I happened to be at a wedding when the whole pandemic broke in early March, and when my wife and I got home, of course I had tons of client calls and lots of education was going on, and I would turn on my, you know, get to my LinkedIn feed or YouTube, and all of a sudden, out of, I don't know, magic, there were 50 non-experts talking about franchising, selling whatever it is they were selling, their lead gen or their PR or I don't know. And they would have, you know, 8 talking heads look like the Brady Bunch, and it would go on for hours. And I thought, no one here was scrambling. Everyone is afraid, to say the least, of what's going on in the world. We had no information. People are scrambling to keep their lives going, their businesses going, and you actually expect people to watch nine people talking at the same time for an hour and a half on lead generation? You're out of your mind. You know, New Yorkers don't wait in line very long for anything. If you want to judge the measure of service at a restaurant, a fast casual restaurant or a coffee shop in New York, don't look at how fast the front of the line is moving. Look at how quickly people are walking off the back of the line.
Right, right. So what are you losing out the back door? Right, right.
Right. Just to give you the visual. So I decided we were going to pick one topic or one question, one expert, ask that question, get it answered in 15 or 20 minutes, have that person be, they could not be appear on the show if they would not make themselves available to questions from the audience, you know, later on, if they wanted a call or email. And within, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks, all of a sudden we had like 7,000 subscribers to this thing. And I thought, oh, okay, this is pretty good. I guess we'll keep this going. And it's evolved. And now it's on Social Geek Radio, as you know. You handle all the production for us. And I've gotten nothing but compliments on it. And quite honestly, it was just formed out of part frustration and part necessity. And the third piece to it is that, as I mentioned earlier, you know, I like to share information.
Yeah, I like that whole get right to the point feeling about it. You know, let's get to what this expert is an expert of, and then we can decide if we're going to follow up and follow further and maybe contact that person. So, kudos on that, and I'm glad it's going so well, and we look forward to many more years of Mastermind Minutes. Gary, before we go, if anyone would like to reach out to you about anything that we talked about today, where's the best place for people to reach you?
Okay, we have three points of entry. I am not afraid to give my email address, which is simple. It's Gary, G-A-R-Y, one R, at frangrow, G-R-O-W, frangrow.com. That's, you can email me. Any questions, whatever, I always respond. Or you can call me. I'm always available at 917-991-2465. I know it sounds crazy to be giving my phone number on the air, but I take calls and emails and I always respond, always.
Excellent. And if we want to reach you online, LinkedIn, website, what's the best place to look?
LinkedIn for sure. Feel free to connect with me. The website is frangrow.com. Our online newsletter is franchisemoneymaker.com. We publish that monthly. If you just Google my name, you'll find various points of entry.
Excellent. We'll have links to all of those places as well. Gary, thank you so much for all of the time you've given us today. And we will see you, I think in Vegas coming up in just a couple of months.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for the time, Jack. I appreciate it.
Before we go, a quick word from Franchise Payments Network. If you're looking for something buzzworthy to reward your customers with, check out Pollinate, an all-inclusive loyalty and gift card technology company focused in the franchise space. Powered by industry veteran Franchise Payments Network, Pollinate works with your team to create reward systems that engage your customers while boosting sales frequency and visibility. Through custom-branded Pollinate apps featuring touchless payments, curbside pickup, and more, franchises have experienced a 17% ticket lift and 50% increase in customer visits. Create new revenue streams with Pollinate, where everybody will earn, redeem, enjoy, and repeat. For a glimpse of what's possible, check out the Pollinate dashboard at pollinate.com/marketing. And thanks for listening to Social Geek. We're here to help you get yourself ready for the comeback of a lifetime. This is the Social Geek Radio Network.